Bobby Rivers, alone in a world that doesn't want him. We can rebuild him, make him better than he was before. Better, stronger, blacker, mocha.
We kissed 2017 goodbye, thank goodness. Hi folks, this is Bobby Rivers back with you for more Mocha. Mocha stands for Man of a Certain Hue and Age. And I hope you had a great holiday season. I want to wish you a very happy new year. And you know what? If good luck and love and success eluded you last year, may you get them in abundance this year. And I also wish that for my friend and producer and partner here on the podcast, Keith Price.
Hello.
Happy New Year. Happy New Year to you, baby.
Look at this.
How was the holiday season for you?
It was fabulous. Very quiet and very personal, if you know what I'm saying.
Hey. That's good. You know, we made it into a new year. Andy Cohen and Anderson Cooper did not ruin New Year's Eve for everybody.
All right, now that you opened up the can of worms.
Did you see some of that?
I watched pieces and chunks of it in passing.
Sat here watching that. You know what? I look like one of the audience members in Mel Brooks, The Producers, watching the Springtime for Hitler number.
Before it became funny?
You know what? Those two queens needed to abdicate.
My gosh. You know, what I found very fascinating about the whole New Year's Eve thing between those two and then Ryan Seacrest on one of the other channels, it's sort of like, and I know that Ryan Seacrest is not gay, but at the same time, what I feel like, you know, the mainstream media is trying to make us love Andy Cohen and Anderson Cooper so damn much.
Right.
Because they're the only two gay men of any kind of stature, color, or anything in this country that anybody would care about watching. And to me, that's what's sad. Because
that's what I felt. I felt like, okay, CNN is looking at them like they're a Will and Grace.
Mm-hmm.
Only they're two Wills. And it's not like that. I think part of the, if I remember correctly, when Kathy Griffin started doing it with Anderson, mm-hmm. he hadn't really come out.
Yeah.
You pretty much knew that he was, but he hadn't come out. And you, because she made him so nervous, that was the fun of it.
Exactly. Like, is she going to out him? You know, and personally speaking, again, and I say this because I know how difficult it is to host events and things in general. Like, I, you know, we are both not strangers to how, what it means to run an entire show. But when you are doing something like the New Year's Eve thing, you have to have a whole cadre of snap back, come back, fun back that doesn't include you being fiercely gay or doesn't, you know, like, in other words, what you have to say actually has to have a true merit of humor and funny attached to it. And
you have got to have a full plate of material in your head.
Exactly. And, you know, granted, you guys are fabulous and everything about you guys is fabulous. And watching you interview Dave Chappelle and John Mayer, it was painful.
Yes.
Because, you know, let's face it. How do you say this without sounding like, you know, you're being vindictive and ugly? But, like, you know, Anderson Cooper is not known for being fun.
Right.
So
he's kind of starchy.
He's starchy and, you know, very little on the uptight side. So,
right.
You know, watching them deal with Dave Chappelle, who, by the way, we caught him hitting the joint right before they went on the camera.
Right before.
Because he don't care. and it's California, and I guess it's legal now. And so they were so busy trying to, like, make us all know how much friendly they all are together, that what kinds of friends they are, that there was no real questions being asked that were any kind of real interest or merit. And it's like, you have Dave Chappelle there, who's about to, at that time, his New Year's Eve special had just come out. He had already, you know, Anderson tried to ask him something pertaining to it, but at the same time, there was just nothing, there's no depth to any of the questions because they can't relate to any of that. Like, those two are not the most entertaining people. Like, they're not entertainers. They,
yeah, right.
And that job to host, you need to be an entertainer. That's why Kathy Griffin with Anderson Cooper works so well, because Kathy Griffin is an entertainer and she knows how to host and how to hold an audience and how to make jokes work and make things happen. And even when they don't work, know how to fix them. Like, she knows how to do that instinctively. So that makes her the perfect person to be there with someone like an Anderson Cooper or someone like an Andy Cohen. If she were to be paired up with either one of them, it would have been great. But neither one of those two guys are entertainers. And so to watch them try to be funny and try to be entertaining is somewhat painful.
On a cue. Night when you would really want entertainment, it's New Year's Eve.
Exactly. So, you know, God bless them because, again, you know, you were where you were for New Year's Eve. I was where I was for New Year's Eve, and there wasn't a TV camera pointing at either one of us. So, you know, let's be clear. So it's like, you people know, don't think that we're just being shady or trying to, you know, be like, I can't believe it. But let's just be honest. Like, those guys are not entertainers. Those guys are, one's a news person, sort of.
Right.
And the other one is, you know, the Real Housewives and a talk show host.
And this is why we turned over to see Mariah.
You know, exactly.
I did.
You know, I had to see her because I needed to have her moment be saved. I had to be saved with her because I knew she would be fine. But there were moments that she was trying to hit some of those notes in that sweet inspiration. I was like, girl, you treat
girl.
Me. You know, it's been a minute since you sang it.
I know you didn't get your tea, but girl.
That was kind of fierce. Everybody else got tea!
It's like, Mariah, honey, settle down. You want us to show us a clip of last year?
It's sort of like whatever producer that you made mad last year that made sure that your thing was all effed up, he's still here this year. And so because of that, you're not getting tea. That's his way of getting back at you from last year. He's not giving you tea.
Good
but
Lord
again,
Almighty.
You
and
know,
that was New Year's Eve.
No, that was New Year's Eve. You know, and Ryan Seacrest.
Yeah.
You know, that's nice.
Again, that's my.
You know, like, what other job do you need to have? A. And B, it's like, the thing is that because I feel like they are so ubiquitous now, all of them.
It really is.
Is that it? That takes away any kind of specialness to them or any kind of significance.
Now, I'm going
to
say this, and I don't mean, I am not trying to be shady or mean saying this.
Per se.
I used to watch the Kelly Ripa morning show. I used to stay through at least the first 15 minutes because it was always lively and I wanted to see if the caller was going to get the trivia question right.
Right.
But when she would have guests like John Leguizamo or Jerry O'Connell or somebody lively, I loved it. But now the New York flavor is gone from that show.
It's bland. It is so bland.
Because Ryan
is so bland.
Ryan is very Sherman Oaks. And it's just like beige linen.
Exactly.
There's not a New York flavor to it anymore.
And you know what's so funny with him? And it's like, okay, so this is how we're going to start our year. We're going to criticize folks that are working.
But keep in mind, we're not working.
But keep in mind, we're not working. But, you know, but when I think about someone like a Ryan Seacrest, it's sort of like one of the other reasons why I think at 9 a.m. when they're doing the live with Kelly and Ryan.
He's very friendly.
He's friendly.
Don't get us wrong.
Exactly.
He's very amiable. He's very friendly.
Exactly.
You know, he's kind of, the audience loves him.
Right. But one of the reasons why it feels so exhausting and so tired is because when you think that he is basically leaving that to go do his morning radio show that goes live out of LA,
yeah,
and then he's got his countless number of E projects that he's working on that include the Kardashians and all of them other folks, and then, you know, he's planning
like,
New
he's
Year's
like
Eve.
He's like at the airport every week.
You know, and so I wonder also is maybe because that's the other reason why he's so bland is because he's tired.
He's He's right. Like, you know, he gets to the hotel room, looks in the Bible, what city am I in? Or whatever, you know.
That's it. And, you know, yeah, and then doing American Idol.
So he's got the New Year's Eve shows. He's got radio. Pretty soon, American Idol's going to be back on the air.
Mm-hmm. And so,
you know, and that is a lot.
That's a lot to take on. And what I find fascinating, though, is that he is doing all of that for what?
Yeah.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, I guess if we were in the position to be making that kind of money work, we'd probably be working like that all the time as well, I would assume. But at the same time, I would hope that if it comes to me at the ages that we are both at now, as men of a certain hue and age, that I think that my priorities have shifted somewhat, in that I think that if I were able to make that kind of money in weird ways like they are making it, I would probably work as hard as I could to make as amass much more, only because, you know, time is a ticking.
Ain't it the truth?
But at the ages that they are, it's like, you know, y'all are pretty much sitting on top of the world, like, you know, in terms of the game that you're in, as far as media is concerned, all of them are sitting at the top of the serving plate. But at the same time, that as they're at the top of the plate, they're just serving bland. And then when you say it, you sound bitter. We sound angry. It's not that at all. We're just like, I just feel like I would hope that people would want more for their entertainment value. And not only are they settling for this, we're being made to force to watch them, but y'all are settling for it. You know, it's like, I don't want people to settle for that. Like, there's so many more flavors of things, and so many, you want to do LGBT gay, like, we've talked about fabulous things all last year that have intersections that have with that whole thing.
People of color, has different flavor, different tones, everything.
And gives you a much more real picture. It's like, those guys on New Year's Eve, to me, it was the phoniest thing I think I've ever watched in my life. And you know, phony, not that they are genuinely fabulous people to each other,
right?
But you could tell that, now granted it was 4 degrees outside too, but
right.
but they didn't, it's just, it wasn't really their medium the way that it should be utilized, you know, at least Ryan knows how to throw back and forth. He's worked in radio. He does the E television stuff. You know what I mean? He's on the red carpet.
And he shares the spotlight. He brings on talent to do something.
Right.
So it's not just about him.
So, you know, but I was so exhausted watching the two of them because they had nothing to offer me entertainment-wise, and I wanted to be entertained. Like, you know, they don't know how to tell jokes. They don't know how to make stories funny. Like a trained comedian, trained storyteller could. You know what I mean? You and I know how to tell funny stories. Like... You know what I'm saying?
Let's be honest. I was sitting there going, Keith and I could have killed if they had just given us 10 minutes.
10 minutes, just or found us a place on the find us places on the street to just show out and throw to us every 15-20. You know what I mean?
You could have taken it. I could have been on the side going, I was never in the chorus. And Bobby remembers that's Vera Charles. I was never in the chorus.
I was never in the chorus.
Well, speaking of chorus.
Yes.
And leads, we are in the award season now this weekend, Sunday, Golden Globes.
Yes. What's going on with all that madness?
January 23rd, the Oscar nominations come out, and I believe they only come out now during Good Morning America on ABC. With the Golden Globes, it's just like, Lord, everybody gets nominated except for a lot of minorities. But, you know.
Well, according to, what's the face?
Oh, Jada Pinkett Smith.
Girl, mind your business, girl. Just mind your own business.
So, but this year, I'm really interested in seeing the pre-Golden Globe show, because Entertainment Reporters are going to be forced to do some work, because the big Hollywood news last year was so severe. It was the harassment story. I'll put it like this. You know what? I was watching women's fashions last year, you know, celebrity fashions, and I'm thinking, God, these girls are showing a lot of side boob. It was like, It's like women had gone to Fredericks of Hollywood to do their shopping. The dresses were showing a lot of cleavage, like Lil Kim cleavage, right?
Because it sells, Bobby. It sells.
And as soon as the Harvey Weinstein story broke, bam!
Everybody looks like Sister Petrell, don't they?
Really? What's that you're wearing? It's called a smock. Oh. So because of the severity
of the schmatas on the red carpet,
right? Because of the whole Me Too thing and the severity of the entertainment news last year, entertainment reporters cannot rely on. So who did your dress like they've usually done? Mm-hmm. A lot of women are going to be wearing black in solidarity. So and at the same time, I don't think the entertainment reporters can just ask everybody about sexual harassment either. So they may be forced to actually do some homework and ask questions about the art. You know, I'm sorry, but I know at first it was for the first couple of years. Oh, who did your dress was mm-hmm. cute and funny. But after that,
yeah. Well, who did your dress? Well, Harvey Weinstein said, I need to say Marquesa. Wow, there's 10 actresses on the runway with Marquesa. I mean, you know, it's like, okay, so now you're going to have to go. So what were you thinking when you decided to take that role on?
Switching from Golden Globes to talking about the Oscars, and I thought, okay, this is why people like you and me and Steve Kometko mm-hmm. sit, watch red carpet shows. Like we're Baby Jane Hudson watching Blanche's old movies. And it was the year that Kathryn Bigelow won the Oscar for Best Director, first woman to ever win the Oscar for Best Director. And there have been women have directed movies that have been nominated for Best Picture. A few women have. An even smaller number is the number of women who also got nominated for Best Director the same year that the movie was up for Best Picture, which kind of makes you go, So, Kathryn Bigelow directs Hurt Locker. It's nominated for Best Picture. It wins. And she's also nominated for Best Director. And she wins. Big deal for women. Now, you know how much a feminist Meryl Streep is.
Right.
The same year Meryl Streep is up for Best Actress, for Julie and Julia, a movie in which Meryl was directed by a woman, the late Nora Ephron.
Right.
I saw Meryl Streep on the red carpet, and the entertainment reporter asked her, guess what?
What was she
Who
wearing?
Who did your dress?
I think you just had to throw down your notes.
If I had been if I wanted to be on that red carpet and start kicking that reporter the way Baby Jane kicked Blanche. What, you thought Blanche was trying to make a phone call? Oh.
It's so funny. Isn't it? It's always fun, though, to be, like, on the red carpet sometimes. I love to just listen to some of the questions that other people ask because I always try not to pretend that I'm giving you full on, you know, Walter Cronkite investigative journalism type questions because I'm not. But there's like a level of engagement that you need to have with your subject matter if you're going to try to ask any kind of questions. And if they're going to be deep or you know, profound, there's still a way to ask them on a red carpet and get an answer. And sometimes I laugh because you can just tell that whoever it is that I'm usually standing next to, you know, especially I would say some of the younger theater journalists here in the Big Apple, a lot of them are, you know, their fan energy overtakes their actual depth.
Journalistic skill.
Exactly. And so I just laugh. Now, granted, I didn't study journalism. I didn't come from a world of journalism, but my years of working in news and my years of working in the radio, I learned a lot. And I learned how the difference is between being friendly and fabulous, which I generally get to hopefully do with most of the subjects, and still get a decent answer out of them or a decent question. Like, you know, I always, oh, my goal is one smart question. That's all. It's like, right. Let's get one. You don't have to try to, like, you know, live it like a Dick Cavett moment, because it's not going to always be that way. You know, and that Dick Cavett is Dick Cavett. I know
exactly what you mean.
You know,
have one substantial question.
And then the rest of it, you can figure out if you actually like the person enough to have, you know, if you've done a little bit of research on the person, you know right. How to gauge yourself. It's just, it cracks me up when I listen to some of the things like this. So, like, who are you wearing?
I would have asked Meryl about women directors that year.
Yeah, you know?
Two big achievements for women directors. And most years had no achievements by women directors.
And no one noticed. But now that women are going to be wearing all black on Sunday at the event, I'm dying to know what kinds of questions they're going to ask and how many of them are going to be the exact same ones. Because let's face it, the folks that do E love them outfit.
Oh,
but
that's right.
They work very, it's a very hard time for them when the big issues roll around. And this, you know, and this, and it's interesting
I forgot. Is Ross going to be there? That Ross guy?
Ross Matthews. Yes, he will be a part of that on E. Yes, he will.
Okay.
You know what? We can't let us not hate on Ross.
No.
He's a wonderful, delightful young man who opportunities have come to him in a way that, you know, when we were coming up, we would have been more than afraid of having had.
Yes, you're true.
And yes. But at the same time, he was born too late.
Oh God!
No, born too soon.
Bobby Rivers will be doing the part of Rose in Gypsy. I saw The Shape of Water. Have you seen it?
No, I have not.
This is the new movie by Mexican director Guillermo del Toro.
You have to say it like this. Guillermo del Toro.
Oh, there.
Guillermo del Toro.
I call him the Scare Bear. He's given us some of the most beautiful monsters since the days of Universal Studios in the 1930s with Frankenstein, Bride of Frankenstein, and The Mummy, and Dracula.
But he likes these creepy movie characters.
You know, though. He does. And he also gives us strong female characters. And this movie, this was the one where Rex Reed hated the movie.
Right. And then got everything all wrong.
Yeah, called him Benicio del Toro. And said he's from Spain and Guillermo's from Mexico. Guillermo. Okay.
And you like saying that, don't you? Guillermo.
Guillermo. I love that. Well, here's the thing. I was so glad that I did not read any reviews about it because I got on social media and I kept seeing people describe it as The Creature from the Black Lagoon meets Splash. Hmm. And I went, okay, I don't want to read the review. I just want to go into it fresh. I loved it. Absolutely loved it. And I still feel like what I said in one of the previous broadcasts, that come January 23rd, Octavia Spencer could make Oscar history as a black actress with a third Oscar nomination, tying with Viola Davis,
right,
who, with three Oscar nominations, is the most Oscar-nominated black actress in all Hollywood history.
Wow.
What, and you know, you and I have been advocating for critics of color. Let's have more diversity on the talk of the arts. I did not get this from any reviews that I may have heard on radio by white reporters, and not that, you know, they don't get it, but it was just something I noticed. And just to tell you that a creature, an amphibian, a sea creature, has been transported to America and is in government custody, secret custody, in the early 1960s. This movie, it's a recession sci-fi story. It's like a story from Hans Christian Andersen or the Brothers Grimm. It's like a morality tale. It's a solid fable, and it's a resistance story because Michael Shannon plays he's just a flat-out racist in this movie.
Oh, my God. He just plays some of the most angry, some of the most violent, and some of the most scary people so well.
So well, because it's the way that his face is structured. But then I saw him do a comedy and he broke me the hell up. Okay, so this creature is transported and there are three people who work in this government facility, and they're like the cleaning people. There's Sally Hawkins and Octavia Spencer, and they're like best friends. Well, the Sally Hawkins character is mute. She can't speak. Rex Reed call her mentally disabled. She's not mentally disabled. She's really smart. She's just mute. And she signs with Octavia's character, and so that's how they speak. They sign. So this creature is brought in, and Michael Shannon starts talking about it. And there's this scene early in the movie in the men's room where the cleaning women are cleaning, and you see, oh, wait, it really subtly shows you how much of a brute this guy is. And this is against the backdrop of people on TV are watching the civil rights movement, people being beaten up because it's the early 1960s, where he hates that he had to bring this creature over from South America. He hates the creature. He doesn't like the creature. He's like teasing it and abusing it. But at the same time, this creature from another country is going to enable him to move up within the workplace and possibly get a raise.
Wow.
So when he's talking like that, I went, oh my God, he could be right out of 12 Years a Slave, because he talks about this creature is less than, and he had to bring it over here to this country. And then he starts quoting the Bible. Wow. And you think about America's slavery past, where people owned slaves. I mean, oh, I just bought a black family, and I sold the kids, and I have them working out in the field for me for free, and I consider myself a Christian.
Yes.
Right?
That's how they do it.
That's how they do it. So the creature, you see, has gifts, and he can communicate. All right. The people who can communicate with the creature, the people to whom the creature responds, and he treats with respect, and it's a mutual respect, the Latina who's disabled, the black woman, and the gay male.
Oh, my.
I know. It's deep. Those three characters, you're watching this, you go, they're really like the hope for America, because they know that this immigrant creature, if you will, has special gifts that can help our society. If they can get away from this racist MF who just wants to torture it, you know. Oh, yeah.
So it's very, very present day.
Yes.
Ooh, Babala.
Yes. So I, you know, so there, when you go to see this movie, and the other thing too, they communicate to the creature via show tunes, which of course I loved.
Oh no. Oh my God.
Because the gay man, you know, he's like, they're disenfranchised people.
Especially, especially of that time.
Especially at that time.
Wow.
Especially, yes.
All right, and Guillermo, I'm not mad at you, Papi. You better work it out.
No, and he just like, what he does with, he co-wrote this screenplay, but it just takes you like beyond race and gender. You just have to give yourself over to this sci-fi fantasy that makes, I think, a very important political statement, especially in this day and age.
Wow.
And Sally Hawkins, man, she's so good at it. She is so good. If she gets a Best Actress Oscar nomination, I won't be surprised. And she's have you ever seen her in other movies?
No, unless you can tell me the titles, because I'm not thinking off top of my head.
First time I ever saw her, and it was a British film that other black folks said, oh, you got to see this girl in this movie called Happy Go Lucky. And it came out, I think, about 10 years ago. She's brilliant in it. She is an optimist who cannot be, it's a steely optimism. And the more that she has hope, and the more that she tells people not to give up, it makes some people livid. Because, but it's such a good character. And, you know, if you grew up in the 60s, or, you know, if you're listening and you're in the United Kingdom, Sally Hawkins is getting the quality of roles that I wish Hollywood had given British actress Rita Tushingham in the 1960s. Ooh. She's got that same, Rita Tushingham, good British actress, was in a movie called A Taste of Honey and A Girl with the Green Eyes. Sally Hawkins has a similar quality and a bit of the same look, but Great Britain did more with Tushingham than Hollywood did. So she's wonderful. And Richard Jenkins plays the gay man, and Michael Shannon. Woo!
All right. So you see an Oscar nomination for Octavia.
I would love to see Octavia get an Oscar nomination for this. Sally Hawkins, I would not be surprised if she gets a. I think she's up for a Golden Globe. Mm-hmm. She was also in a movie. She did an art house movie that only opened for like a week, 2 weeks in some special theaters, and a lot of people didn't see it. Every person that I know who saw it raved about her, and it was called Maudie. And then there's Maudie. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what the story is, but I just heard that she was brilliant in that. So, you know, people at the Academy may have seen it, and maybe that will impress them to say, hey, you know, okay, we gave her the nomination for Blue Jasmine, and mm-hmm. she's good again here. We'll give her that.
That's where I remember the name. Okay. She played the sister, right?
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
Okay.
Okay.
Kate Blanchett's sister that was like, you're delusional.
As she was. So give that, you know, if you folks are up for a sci-fi fantasy, it's not just The Creature from the Black Lagoon meets Splash. There's political, social content to this. Wow. The Shape of Water. I recommend it. Mm. I also saw Call Me by Your Name.
Oh, you. All right now.
Oh, and you know what? I love that one too. And again, just like with The Shape of Water, I'm glad I didn't read a lot of reviews because I went into it and the story was able to unfold and surprise me. I wasn't expecting that, you know, because some reviewers give away much too much about the movie.
Right.
There's one thing that I will say that I didn't like, and this was not about the movie, but a way that some people described it in social media, a couple of reviewers, they said, well, older gay man falls for a young gay male. And it's like, you know, that's kind of misleading because it's not like Woody Allen's Manhattan where you have a 40-year-old guy who's dating a girl who's in the senior year of high school.
Exactly.
This is a very sensuous tale about first love. And it just happens to be first love between two males. Now, there's the 17-year-old who's almost 18, and the other male is a very responsible, somewhat jockish graduate student. So he's like 22.
Okay.
And the family, the 17-year-old is with his wonderful parents. They have a villa in Italy. That's where they are for the summer. And the father is an academic. He's a professor in archaeology. And the grad student is living with them in the villa for like 6 weeks, helping the father with the research project. Mm-hmm. And so
I bet he is.
Yeah, right? Well, at first, like, he is like, oh, he's a 17-year-old, and he's got his mind on his work, and he's kind of jockish, and the 17-year-old is just hitting him with wisecracks and just finds him annoying. Mm-hmm. But then you watch him, and it's a really good performance because he's just, there's a girl in town who kind of likes him, and he kind of likes her, but he's at that awkward age where he's starting to have erotic feelings, but his body is so awkward that he doesn't quite know how to physically and verbally express them.
Wow.
The grad student, like I said before, is very responsible, so he kind of gets a hint that the 17-year-old may find him attractive, but he deflects it, like with a wisecrack or something. And then the story gradually unfolds, and that's all I'm going to tell you. It is beautifully shot. It is beautifully acted. And yeah, at the end of the movie ended, and I just wished I was in someone's arms. It was just like that. That's how I felt. And if you go see it, when the credits start, do not get up and leave. You have to stay through the credits. There is one final shot, and there's some brilliant acting in that final shot. So just stay until the screen goes dark and you see the credits. Just stay until you don't see the close-up anymore. But that Timothée Chalamet, is that his name?
I believe so.
He's very, very good. Armie Hammer is wonderful. There is a performance in there that of a movie that I love. I really, really, really fell in love with the 17-year-old's academic father. He is just a teddy bear of a papa, And he's so understanding and so wise, and he has this monologue near the end that just put tears in my eyes. And the actor is Michael Stuhlbarg, who is also in The Shape of Water. So he plays the Russian scientist in The Shape of Water. In Call Me By Your Name, he's playing the loving Jewish dad.
Talk about getting your acting range on.
For real. And he really needs to be in the Best Supporting Actor Oscar category for Call Me By Your Name. He really does.
All right. Look at that, Bobby.
Well, I just thought I could tell you about a couple of things new that I just loved.
That's so fabulous. So these are the new films that are still, that are now, are they?
They're just opening.
Like,
they're
are they starting the wide release now?
I think both of these have, The Shape of Water and Call Me By Your Name are both nominees for Golden Globes this coming weekend. Uh-huh. I don't think they've opened nationally yet, but they're on the brink of opening nationally.
Wow. So now,
so they're in selected cities.
So now there's the Golden Globes, and then the SAG Awards are somewhere.
The SAG Awards, I forget when, but they're coming up soon.
And they're before the Oscar nominations, or right after the Oscar nominations?
I think the SAG Awards come before the Oscar nominations.
Oh, nice.
Right.
And then end of February, they do the big shebang, and then went to...
They moved them this year. It's early March.
Oh, okay.
Like the first, like March 4th or 5th, they pushed them back a little bit because it got to be like a traffic jam. It was like, Jesus Christ, these poor actors don't have a chance to change their clothes. It's like, okay, Golden Globes, People's Choice, Grammys, Oscars. It was just too much.
Too much.
So they have a little bit of a breather this year.
Well, those poor dears suffering for their art.
Ain't it the truth?
I'm so glad that they will be able to be accommodated. Oh, my God. So wonderful. Don't hate the player, hate the game. I know.
Oh, God.
That's part of the mantra for 2018.
Because who knows? This year could end with us being happily employed.
Exactly.
We hope.
Knock on wood, honey. You know, but it'll be whatever it is. I hope that it'll allow us to be exactly who we are, so that we don't have to play that game anymore. Because, like, Jesus Christ, already I'm exhausted. Because again, like I said, give us a microphone for 2 hours, 3 hours, and the world watching. And Mariah Carey and them coming up later, and Dave Chappelle, we're going to get to talk to. Honey, you and I would have worked that. Honey.
We sure would.
We would have worked that shit like a 9 to 5, honey. So, no tea, no shade. AC squared, no tea, no shade. But, you know, again, and this is what I say to America now, after, you know, of course, we are catty, and that's how we're going to be, so it doesn't matter. But, like, for the people that objectively tried to watch them.
Yes.
With the thought of possibly going to see their live traveling show, because, you know, the two of them are going to be on, like,
They do shows together.
They're going to do, like, a lecture circuit thing together.
They make millions, and then they get paid to be on a stage and just talk.
And people are paying them money to sit and watch the pair. So, like, now, if what we saw at New Year's Eve is any indication of what the possibility of the genius of conversation will be in those other shows. Okay.
Oh, good Lord.
Y'all good at, you know what? Again, I don't hate the player, hate the game. Because if that's what people are going to really pay for, then we really don't have a choice.
That's the truth. We're just getting what the corporations want us to get.
Exactly. And so if you want more than that, then you're going to have to make the effort, which is why we love the fact that you guys are listening to us here at Mocha.
Yeah, we do. We're starting to get a little response.
There's a little heat.
Not from Turner Classic Movies, because I think the TCM people just want to, they put a hit on me.
They put a fatwa on your ass. Because... where the black folks at? See? They got mad.
Yes.
Because you called them out.
You know what? I did that up until the end of the year.
Mm-hmm. But you know what?
And especially, it was the last Thursday of December. And I was like, dang, the last time that I saw a black guest host on Turner Classic Movies was in December of 2016. So it's the last Thursday of December for 2017, and Michael Feinstein was the guest host. And he's showing an old Betty Grable musical called The Dolly Sisters. So I'm watching the intro, and Michael Feinstein says, after you hear several of Betty's numbers, be sure to look for the one called Lipstick, Powder, and Rouge. It's so funny. And then I quickly got on social media and wrote, and watch for the one that comes after that called Dark Town Strutter's Ball. Warning, it's a blackface number. Because, you know, personally, I loved her, but I think, you know what? If they're gonna have Betty Grable in blackface as a pickaninny, folks need a warning.
They need a warning. Because you let me click onto that one day and be like, what? Excuse me? It's like, it'll be the same outrage that I had when I was in the 11th grade with Miss Hintz, my English teacher, when I said to her, why is it that you make me read Mark Twain's classic books and you're telling me that they're classics and every other page is nigga, 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 nigga. And then...
Really?
And then when I ask you, could you give me something by Langston Hughes, you frown your face.
For real.
So
you interviewed Michael Feinstein, haven't you?
I love Michael Feinstein.
Yes, and a good guy.
He
mentioned that and went, you know what? He never mentioned the blackface number.
No,
well, and I thought, Michael, people got to know that.
Because you know what? That's too much for America, darling.
Oh, okay.
They can't handle that kind of realness, baby.
That's why TCM is not gonna bring
you in. Because they'll be asking you to, please, Bobby, don't mention the blackface scene. Could you please just not mention it? We love Betty Grable here. Her grandchildren love us here. Please, Bobby, please. Don't mention the blackface.
See, I think I'm trying to do like a public service, but they're seeing me like the classic film equivalent to Jennifer Lewis on Blackish.
You're like the Dr. Killjoy. You know what I mean? Like... It was a light musical, Bobby, until you brought in the blackface thing. It's like, I didn't bring it in. It was there before I got here.
Which is my point, TCM. I love you. But when you see more blackface numbers than you see black hosts, we need to talk about this.
Have a conversation. You see? And this is why Mocha with Bobby Rivers at gmail.com needs your input.
Thank you. Tell them more.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Here we are, mocha.podomatic.com, where you can find us there. You can find us at iTunes. You can find us in Google Play Music. You can find us on Mixcloud. You got a question or concern or a comment, you can send it to mocha, with Bobby Rivers at gmail.com. And, you know, tell us what you think. Tell us what you feel, how it's doing. We're on the Twitter at Mocha with Bobby. We can also Facebook, Mocha with Bobby Rivers. Mocha with Bobby Rivers. So there's
We talk about film, TV, awards, Broadway. You tell them where they can hear your Broadway podcast.
Yes.
Where you interview people like Michael Feinstein.
I have several times now. Michael Feinstein and I have a thing now whenever we get together. It's Keith Price's Curtain Call that's also available on iTunes, Google Play Music, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Mixcloud. And also, it is a featured podcast on BroadwayWorld.com. And the next thing that I'm working on for BroadwayWorld.com is going to be my top 10 episodes of podcasts for the last year for 2017. And
Excellent.
That list includes Betty Buckley. And it also includes Sheldon Harnick.
Oh my gosh, yes.
And in a surprising turn of events, the number one podcast that was episode of my podcast that was listened to last year are with two people that I had no idea who they were before they came into my room.
Really?
Yes. These young lyricist playwrights that came into the room and I was like, who are you and where is your Accutane? And then tell me about your musical, because I was really surprised. And it turned out to be one of the most listened to podcasts of 2017.
Don't we love that? We love that.
So that's going to be coming out this week. So look for that. And at the same time, look for this, you know, more episodes of Mocha. And at the same time, too, go back and listen to some of the other episodes and comment and link if you're on iTunes. Subscribe to us on iTunes and leave us a comment and rate us and do all those things that people need to have happen. Because
we give you history, folks. You got two black gay men talking about new movies, classic films, and Broadway. What do you mean? Often do you see that on TV or hear that on the radio?
Let me see.
Never.
Never. I was listening for an argument.
There is none.
Oh, Bobby, well, this was fabulous.
Oh, thank you. And folks, I want to remind you, like, you got two good movies you can take in, The Shape of Water and Call Me by Your Name. Oh,
all right. Oh,
Call Me by Your Name. Go out for ice cream after. Make it peach flavored. Okay.
Perfect.
Fabulous to be with you again. I'll catch you next time.
Perfect. I love it.
Thank you so much for listening, for putting more mocha into your day. That's Man of a Certain You and Age. And we'll catch you next time. Thank you. Happy New Year.
Mocha.